Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast for today. We've been interviewing, and this is part three of our four-part interview, with Mark Marslin, coming from Great Britain. Mark was a man who hid behind a mask for years, a public persona he tried projecting. Looking from the outside in, he had it all. You'd think it was completely successful. You know, he had the nice car, the big house, successful business. He was successful in sports and other areas of his life. But on the inside, he was absolutely miserable, suffering from anxiety and depression and relationship problems and all these other things. But he was able to overcome that. And now he helps others to identify and overcome those problems as well. If you missed either one of the prior two interviews we did with Mark, you need to go back and listen to it because they're awesome. And as you're listening to the conversation, you're going to be able to tell that we have struck up a great relationship. It seems like we've known each other for years. But Mark is a great guy. You're going to enjoy this interview. You're going to be one that identifies with what it is he is trying to talk about, trying to show you, trying to help you in overcoming. He has written a book, Dying to Be Happy, Embracing Death and Finding Life. This is a great book, and it's written for those who are basically crippled by anxiety and depression. It is available on Amazon and on his website, and we're going to talk about that book today. Right now, I want you to get out your pen and your paper, get ready to take some notes, because Mark Marslin is going to be diving in to some deep things that you definitely, definitely need to hear about. And I'll be back on the other side with some final thoughts. Now, back into the interview with Mark Marslin.
An amazing and wonderful things, and every chapter in my book starts off with one of those sayings, something that's been gifted to me because I know I'm supposed to give it to everybody else and help them. And one of the first things that came through on my journey was this: only when we illuminate others with no expectation of reward at all for ourselves, only in that moment do we truly understand how to illuminate ourselves.
Yeah.
My job is to illuminate you. My job is to illuminate them. That is what I do. That is the gift that came from my suffering that I give to you in the work that I do. And you know, nothing's ever going to top that, ever.
Yeah, amen. Now, did you have to get any special schooling or credentials to do the things you're doing to help people?
Yeah. I actually qualified twice as a hypnotherapist. I was the UK's youngest qualified hypnotherapist at the age of 21. I qualified in 1988 at the Institute of Hypnosis and Parapsychology in London. I trained over there, and at 21 years old, you know, that wasn't the normal kind of profession that people my age were going into.
Right.
But I'd been into building. I was a roof tiler. I'd done heavy physical labor before that, laboring. My dad was a bricklayer. I was going to go into a building apprenticeship, a bricklaying apprenticeship, but we hit a huge recession when I left school in 1981, and my life shot off on another trajectory. Yeah. So I was always fascinated with the brain and the power of the brain and the belief that if you put your mind to something, you can truly make it happen. So that's where my fascination with the brain came around and the subconscious mind, and that led me into hypnotherapy. And like I said, I had a practice before I went away to the States, playing American football at collegiate level. And then I came back, and for some reason I didn't pick it up. Mm. And then when I went through that journey that I went through that sent me to that darkest place, when I came back from that, I tried to go back into retail again. I had a huge fishing tackle and outdoor pursuit center, which had done very well. And I tried to set it up in a different name and move forward with that again. And I realized that I'd done that. I realized that that was part of the problem before. I realized that that was never going to fulfill me. And I had this extremely strong desire to just get back into hypnotherapy again and helping people again. And so I went to Notts Uni, which is just down the road from where I am now, about 40 miles away at Nottingham Trent University. I re-qualified in hypnotherapy, even though I didn't need to have my original qualification. And I took that qualification, and I actually procrastinated for about 18 months. I'm in an awing as to, you know, can I do this? should I be doing this? You know, and that voice was niggling, that same voice that was getting me to write the book was in my ear, you've got to do this, you know, you must do this. And until eventually my better half, Reef, said, you know, forget about doing this, forget about doing that. This is what you're meant to do, Mark. This is your calling. You know it, I know it. You know, you are so good at helping other people. People are drawn to you. You need to be doing this, and you know in your heart of hearts you've got to let everything else go and absolutely shine your light on this. And that's what I did, and I never looked back. And then from there, I got I requalified as well in neuro-linguistic programming, and I requalified in BWRT, which is brain working recursive therapy. I use Hagening techniques. Brain working recursive therapy deals with the lizard brain as opposed to the subconscious brain. So it's actually changing your brain in that moment by changing the neurological pathways in your brain and getting to fire in a different way. So you're shutting a negative pattern down, and you're actually putting in a positive pattern to replace that behavior and those feelings that have been holding you back. So I'm always looking and researching new methods and new mythologies and any new discoveries and adding them to my toolbox if I think it's going to help me be a better practitioner, be a better therapist, serve those people who need me in a better way. So yeah, I bring a lot of my own tools and my own beliefs, if you like, and learnings to the therapy room, but also I back that up with a lot of other professional tools that I've acquired along the way that I feel add to me, and that in itself adds to therapy and adds to, you know, everything I can do. I figure if I've got more tools in my box, maybe it does sometimes happen that you get somebody who comes in who is so balled up in a knot of emotion, crying, you know, I've had people crying in front of me, biting themselves in front of me, unable to make eye contact with me, an absolute ball of emotion and anxiety and stress and depression. And sometimes you need to reach for a tool like Havening, which relies on touch. Touch is our first language, and we all track back. And if you lightly touch your own face, if you lightly touch your face, if the listeners that are out there now, if they just take the two, the index finger and the finger below it, the middle finger, and if you do that now with me, Bob, and you just put those two fingers above your eyebrows, at the, you know, right on your eyebrows at the point above your nose, and the other two fingers gently underneath the eyes, and you just trace around your eyebrows and down, bringing those two index fingers to a point on your chin, and you just repeat that now. Just repeat that process very, very gently, and just do that three or four times, and then just slowly and gently just stroke your nose from the top to the tip very gently, and then just lifting it off with a little peek at the end. Just doing that now will relax you.
And the reason it's working,
and the reason it relaxes you is because that tracks back to when you were a baby in your mother's arms and your mum was doing that to you to put you to sleep and talking to you in a very soothing, calming way. And you subconsciously, your body subconsciously tracks back to feeling calm, to feeling safe, to feeling soothed. And you can bring a person down in that moment and then connect them to something like a nursery rhyme, you know, and ask them what their favorite nursery rhyme is and get them to hum it together, you know, or what's your favorite thing that's ever happened to you, a moment you're enjoying, then get them to visualize that moment, and then you can stroke their face with their permission and their arms, and you can bring that whole anxiety down. And once you've got that anxiety down to a level where you can manage it and talk and the eye contact's better and the breathing is better, then you can start to use things like hypnotherapy or NLP or BWRT or whatever tool is fitting for that unique individual that's in front of you in that moment, in that time, to help them to start that process of glowing and growing. But sometimes, sometimes you need to have those extra things in your toolbox to enable you to get that person to that place and that space. So it's really, really important, I always think. Some people say, oh, no, just concentrate on BWRT or just concentrate on hypnotherapy. But what if those tools by themselves with that particular person that day aren't good enough and you're lost and you have to hold your hands up and say, I'm sorry, I don't think I can help you. We try, but hypnotherapy is not going to cut it. Well, maybe hypnotherapy won't, but BWRT will, and maybe BWRT won't, but havening will, and maybe havening won't, but something else will. And so it's reaching for that, you know, neuro-linguistic programming will, or anything else. So I'm always looking, you know, something, you know, if I read something up in Psychology Weekly or somebody shares something on my timeline, a fellow therapist, or points with something, and I look at it and I think, that sounds really interesting. It strikes a chord with me. Then I'll go and research it and I look at it. And the more I'm thinking, yes, that makes sense, yes, that makes sense, the more I'm going to want to put that into my toolbox and make that part of who I am and what I'm offering. But I do work very instinctively. I think that every single person that's in front of me has their own unique story, their own unique life, mm-hmm. and that deserves a unique approach every time. There is no way that I would sit there with a one-shoe-fits-all mentality thinking, you know, I'm going to make this person fit this shoe, because it's not going to happen. You've got to instinctively trust that the universe is going to give you everything you need to help this person. And often, if need be, I will ask the universe that help. Please help me. Please help the universe to help this amazing, beautiful person that you brought to me. I know you brought that person to me for a reason. Please help me. Help me to help them. And I believe that the universe will step in every time and do that. And so far, it has. And I feel very blessed because of that.
I'm hesitant to ask this next question because I don't want to dissuade anyone from trying what we were just talking about, if it's going to be beneficial. But I'm going to ask it because this is what I thought. You know, we went in again before we recorded about some of the things that had happened in my life that brought me to where I'm at today. And I was thinking about going to hypnotherapy way back when. But, you know, how can I say this? I was worried about, you know, because you see hypnosis on, you know, television and stuff like that. You know, people are, you know, quacking like a duck every time a horn blows or whatever. And I was worried way back when about, you know, going to something like that and just releasing, you know, my inner psyche to the control of someone else, you know. How do you alleviate the fears of people that have those concerns?
Well, you know, there's a real big difference between stage hypnosis.
I know there is, but I just had to put that out there so people will understand.
It's a question that comes up a lot. It's not a question that I hear a lot because, to be fair, most people that come to me, they've been recommended to me by somebody that's already been through the process, or they've read all the reviews online about the people that I've worked with, so they've got a good understanding of who I am and what I'm doing. But, you know, I always ask the question, and most people, you know, we have this amazing thing out there called Google now, and people are on it all the time, so they can answer those questions themselves by going online and researching the difference between stage hypnosis and hypnotherapy. And the truth is, you could never get anybody to do something they don't want to do. If that was the case, then hypnotists and hypnotherapists would be among the richest people on the planet, because we'd be getting everybody to empty their bank balances and sign their houses away and join our programs or whatever,
right.
You know, and we'd all be super rich. And then when we get super rich, we'll realize that that's not actually what's making us happy. So, you know, it's not going to work. So, yeah, you can't get anybody to do something that they don't want to do in hypnosis. And, you know, I'm very skeptical all the time. You know, people go on stage because they want to go on stage. People go on stage because they are very receptive to suggestion and they have fun with it. And that's great. And it's a great entertainment. But what we're talking about is therapeutic hypnosis. We're talking about using hypnosis to help somebody let go of pain, to let go of fear, to let go of post-traumatic stress disorder or whatever it is that they're suffering from, to enable them to move forward in a positive way in their lives. And the easiest way that I explain what hypnotherapy is it's just a narrowing down of concentration. So at some point today, you will have been in hypnosis. And if you're reading a book, that's trance. If you're absorbed in a TV program and the doorbell goes and you don't hear it, that's trance. If you're absolutely and utterly focusing on this podcast right now and finding it extremely entertaining, which I hope you are, and extremely informative, which I hope you are, that is trance. It's just a narrowing down of concentration into a moment, into a point in time where you lose the focus of everything else and you're just in that moment. And so we live that in sport. We live that in conversations. We live that when we're playing a game of chess. So trance is everywhere. And when we daydream and when we go off in our minds on these amazing, beautiful journeys and we see ourselves doing things and seeing things and using that imagination and writing poetry and writing music, all of these are of narrowing down of concentration and focus, which is trance. So we're in and out of trance all the time. And when you walk out there, and when the listeners walk out there later on today or wherever they are, they'll notice trance a lot more in their lives. They'll see a person reading a book. They'll see two people on a bench absorbed in conversation. They'll catch themselves daydreaming and think, yeah, that's trance. So trance is a natural state that we are in and out of all the time. And so it's a part of who we are. And all we do with hypnotherapy is we allow people to relax their bodies completely and get into that trance-like state by just focusing on my voice and changing the tone of my voice slightly and allowing them to take a deep breath and imagine that they're breathing in soothing, calming, warming relaxation and breathing out stress and tension and anxiety and fear. Mm-hmm. And that's the beginning of that journey into trance that enables you to bypass the critical factor or the conscious brain and get into the subconscious brain where you can make those wonderful, beautiful, positive, permanent changes in a person's life that helps them move forward. So I hope that's been a nice explanation of the difference. Yeah.
As you were explaining that, you know, because we're the golf analogy, you see back in the day, I haven't watched too much of golf lately because I'm just so busy, but watching Tiger Woods, when he would get ready to make a putt, he would kneel down, you know, behind the ball, looking at the lay of the green, but he would put his cup his hands around the bill of his cap, so he's blocking everything else out except what he's looking at, and he's visualizing. He said he's visualizing the roll of the ball, how he's going to make the putt, how it's going to react, but he's, as you say, he's focused. He's cutting out everything else from around him and just focused exactly on that. So it's kind of like that, right?
Absolutely. You know, and I did hear a story once. I have no idea if there's any truth behind it, that he was working with a hypnotherapist in his heyday when he was winning all of those tournaments. Wow. And he found himself after in a particular tournament where he birdied six or seven birdies in a row. Mm. And he admitted to his caddy that he couldn't remember. He couldn't remember the putts. He couldn't remember dropping it.
Wow.
So that would dictate in itself that he was in some kind of a zone and completely zoned out and oblivious to everything around him and on autopilot. And that's what we're teaching people to do. Yeah. We're teaching people, we're programming the subconscious mind to go over something again and again and again, to visualize that putt, to visualize stroking that putt, to already see the line that that putt is traveling on before you hear that satisfying plop of it going into the hole. And when you program that, and that program in that in your brain becomes so ingrained that your body goes into autopilot in those moments, then you can almost feel separated from that moment. So it wouldn't surprise me at all, because I've had that happen to me in sport. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of the sports people that I've worked with have had that moment when you ask them, what did it feel like? And it was like, I can't remember. It was almost like I was on autopilot. I wasn't having to think about it. I wasn't overthinking it. And I think that's when Tiger played his best golf. It's great to see him coming back now, by the way. Yeah. What an amazing comeback to win again, you know, on the tour. It's absolutely phenomenal. I think everybody, you know, was wishing that, and everybody wanted that, regardless of what he's done. You know, and that's part of his journey, of course. That's part of his learning. Yeah. And we don't, you know, who are we to sit in judgment, you know, on that?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
We've all sinned and come short.
Absolutely. And, and you know, and to see him flying again and see him up there again when so many people didn't think he would do, including himself, I think that's a miracle in itself. And I think we should applaud the fact that he's managed to do that. But, yeah, in his heyday, when he was that machine, I think that he wasn't overthinking the game. I don't think it, I know it. You can just tell, like you say, you could see that focus, you could see that duty. You know, as far as he was concerned, he was playing that game on his own, and he was playing the course. He was just competing against the course. Every shot mattered. Every putt mattered, absolutely and utterly in that zone. And because he was so focused, that narrowing down of focus was so precise, absolutely he was in a hypnotic trance. Whether he was inducing that himself or he'd had help to do that, you know, without a doubt, he was
Amen.
He was not just physiologically playing the best game with that swing and with that stroke and everything, but psychologically.
The mind game.
His mind was absolutely in tune. What he was seeing and what he was feeling and the belief that he had in himself and the energy that he was putting out there that was so positive, that was that aura around him, that is trance, without a shadow of a doubt. That is trance. And you've got to be in that kind of trance to put on that kind of a performance where you're so focused. You know, whether it's tennis and you're watching that ball almost coming in slow motion before you connect with it, it's that feeling of not having to overthink anything. It just happens. It's just that reaction. It's just automatic because you are in tune with everything that's enabling you to get that little ball around that golf course and put it in every single spot that you're visualizing it's in before it actually gets there. That most definitely is trance at work.
Just another quick golf example. My grandson was about 10. We were at a tournament he was in, and I was his caddy, you know, helping him carry the clubs and stuff. And I would give him pointers just like a caddy would do, and knowing what his distance was and all that. And I said, okay, you see the cart sign up there? Aim at that cart sign, and you'll be set up for the next, you know, shot. And honest to God, he hit the cart sign. Right, and it bounced off. I said, "Oh man!" He goes, "You told me to aim for the car sign." I mean, it was a little 1 foot square, you know, 150 yards away, and he just nailed it.
You told me to aim for it. There was never any kind of doubt in his little mind, was there? There was never any kind of doubt, and I think that's where that freedom comes from. That he's taking what you say literally, and he's just doing it. He's not thinking that it's impossible to hit that sign. He's thinking, "Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, I'll do it."
And I think, you know, that is the problem. When we get older, we actually step in front of ourselves by overthinking things and not just letting that connection with the club, with the ball, with the swing, with that visualization come out. And we actually start to put those barriers in the way. So the more instinctive golf you can play, the more natural golf that you can play, for me, the better golfer you are. You know, who are the best golfers? Who are the best sports people? They're the best people that have done those things so many times such an automatic thing that they don't have to think about it anymore. It's absolutely ingrained in them. They don't overthink anything. I think when you're thinking, am I square on the backswing? Are my hands in the right position? Am I closing the club face or opening the club face? When you're thinking about you're losing that connection because you're having to think about it. And when you're just doing those things automatically and you're just looking at the ball, looking at where you want the ball to go, setting up to the ball, closing your eyes and feeling that swing and imagining where that shot's going and then opening them up and pop, away you go and away it goes. And you don't think about it. You pick the tee up, you know, and chuck it in the bin and carry on, or put your gloves, take your glove off as you're thinking about the next shot. You know, whatever you're doing that's part of your routine that's allowing you to already be thinking ahead and plotting that ball around. It is a bit chess-like as well, isn't it? Because it's about putting that in the position you want to be in. I think, you know, that's the difference between maybe a scratch golfer and a +4, +6, +7 golfer. Because at the end of the day, they're plotting that ball around. They're actually purposely playing short of the green so they can use their favorite iron in and know that they're super accurate with that, because it's no good putting it, you know, 10 yards from the pin when you want to be putting it 5 yards from the pin and giving yourself a much better chance of a birdie. And that's what I noticed when I played with Connor in big tournaments and watched him playing. The difference between a plus golfer and a scratch golfer is that accuracy from 100 yards in. And giving yourself the best chance, not just nailing it all the way down, but actually thinking, no, if I take those bunkers out here and I make my next shot there, that's going to leave me a 90-yard wedge in, and I know that I can put that 90-yard wedge time and time again in that, you know, 5-foot, 10-foot circle, and it's going to be there. And you know, that's all about, you know, margins and narrowing those margins down and working those statistics and knowing each and every club in your bag and each and every grip down on that club. So that club in itself could be two or three clubs in one,
absolutely,
depending on where you're gripping it and how you're swinging it. And you just learn all those things, and that's what enables you to become a great golfer. It's probably one of the reasons why I never played, because way too technical for me.
I call myself a hacker. So.
Yeah, that's it.
I put the gloves on,
put the gum shield in, and think, okay, it's him or me, and you know, I've got to take him out or he's got to take me out, and it's as simple as that. And I haven't got to really think about too much else other than react to not getting punched in the face.
Hey, everyone. Pastor Bob here again. We are all out of time again for today. Man, that clock runs fast. Especially when I'm talking to someone so interesting as Mark Marsland. As you can tell, we hit it off great. Mark is a great resource. You definitely need to get his book, Dying to Be Happy, Embracing Death and Finding Life. You need to go to his website and at markmarsland.com and look around. Reach out to him. Ask questions. Folks, I know some of you are suffering through the same exact things that Mark did, that I did, which was this public persona. You have to project happiness. You have to project wealth. You have to project success. But on the inside, you're wondering if life is really worth it all. I've been there. He's been there. People I know have been there. Folks, it is hard to overcome, but it can be overcome. And Mark is there to help you out. Get a hold of Mark. Get a hold of his book. And get the help that you need. Till tomorrow, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do. Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this. Your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing FaithCasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts, share your unique insights, and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with FaithCasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the FaithCasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. FaithCasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a FaithCaster. FaithCasters, your voice, your platform, your success.